top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
Strange case. No sign of violence, yet she looks completely contorted in fear. Almost as if she'd been frightened to death. As if she'd seen something too horrible to live through.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
You're dead, motherfucker.
Not until the fat lady sings. Pony. And I'm the fat lady. Drop it. You're under arrest for the purchase of illegal firearms with intent of first-degree murder of law enforcement officers. That was for resisting arrest.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 231. One Tough Bastard, a.k.a. One Man's...
Justice.
Yeah, whenever I hear the phrase one man's, I always think one man's trash, and I think, oh, that's a lovely segue into this.
What about one man gang from the WWE, WWF back then?
So this is One Tough Bastard, eh? So this is the OTB.
Not to be confused with Dirty Bastard.
Not the ODB, this is the OTB, you know? The OTB, OTB, no? Okay, I thought you'd get more of a kick out of that. No? Okay, whatever. Off-track betting, perhaps?
Oh, good. Okay.
OTB. No, this is a shitty action film from 1996 starring, inexplicably, a favorite of yours, Brian Bosworth. This is the third Brian Bosworth film that we're talking about on this podcast. The first one was that god-awful Contagion film, Virus. The second one was, I guess, his most notable film, Stone Cold. Not to be confused with Stone Cold Steve Austin, keeping the wrestling theme. And the third one, of course, are they chronological? I don't even know. Is One Tough Bastard. And this is Skinny Boz, because when he did Stone Cold, he was still in his NFL infamy, so he kind of had the mullet mohawk, and he was buff. But with Virus and this one here, he's just a skinny blonde dude.
It's a return to form, I guess, what he was.
No, it's not a return to form.
He's pre-roids.
Well, yeah, so it's a return to form. It's a return to normalcy, I guess.
Well, I was going to say, he's UPS. When it comes to bad movies, he delivers consistently. He's that not in true. A bad movie. This guy is unbelievably...
Well, he's in lots of bad movies, but they're good bad movies.
Yeah, yeah. And incredibly entertaining. There's a reason a guy of his such middling star power is such a regular fixture on our podcast. Forget Bruce Willis. The Boz has three movies we've talked about, and so it's disproportionate to his influence.
And you were fascinated from him right from the beginning about him, fascinated about him because of his football career, but we don't have to go into that because we've talked about his shenanigans when he was in the NFL in some of our prior Boz
discussions,
podcasts.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's crazy that we keep returning to this well, knowing that we're going to get gold.
Because yeah, exactly.
I mean, this movie starts off with Slim Boz again. You know, this is... the after version of Boz, and he's running, but he's running up a mountain. It's accompanied to this tepid music accompaniment. Always great when an action film starts off with tepid music accompaniment. And he's running up a mountain, and you get this. I mean, this is his morning workout, but there's nothing on top of the mountain except for his daughter, who at first I thought was his son, this toe-headed moppet, and I'm like, what did he do? Helicopter the dog to the top of the mountain before he took his run?
Yeah.
Or was this his second time up the mountain?
Well, I immediately thought social services. How did this guy leave a kid on top of a mountain?
on top of the mountain.
She's all of, what, 7, 8 years old, maybe 10? Well, she shouldn't be left alone on top of this crevice, dude, in the beating sun.
That's the least of the worst that's going to be happening to her, so don't even worry about that. Because worst things are afoot for the daughter of Sergeant John North.
Sergeant, we know how the immediate family of action heroes fares in action movies. They're not long for this earth.
But it's funny, because when he is on top of the mountain with his daughter, and it's before school, because at the end of it, he's like, well, let me get you to school. I guess this movie's trying to show us the gentle side of the boss, so he's talking about hawks in the sky and ladybugs and how much he loves animals, and it's so incongruous to the image of Brian Bosworth. And then in the next scene, we see him kicking ass as some sort of like combat instructor for the army.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny you should mention the hawk mention, because there's just countless hawk sounds on the soundtrack over and over again. There's the incessant squawking. It reminded me of Birdemic. It was like, just constantly. But yeah, this guy, these two facets of this guy's existence juxtaposed. The ass-kicking drill sergeant who runs his recruits through the paces with those stupid songs, you know, like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, hands off, whatever, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever. And he's skilled in the art of deadly hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just fantastic. Montage City, off the bat. Yeah. The ass kicking.
Totally, totally. Of course, you know it's a good action movie if you've got a montage, especially within the first 15 minutes. So this plot's convoluted, because you have cover-ups within the army mixed with cover-ups within the FBI, mixed with some weird rogue FBI agent we're going to talk a lot about, and mixed with fucking MC Hammer of all things to add some urban message or what have you. There's so much weirdness going together the catalyst for the plot is because the army is selling illegal weapons to this guy by the name of Savak, and we're going to talk about Savak a lot. At this point, we just think he's a bad guy. I mean, the guy looks like a bad guy. He's got two nose rings. He's got hair like fucking Robin Zander.
I was going to say Lestat from Interview with the Vampire.
Lestat too,
mixed
yeah.
with the singer in Poison.
Well, yeah, LeBron Michaels, for sure, for sure. He wears, you know, trench coats that go all the way down to... Like,
okay, in what world is an FBI agent thusly attired?
There's a fucking dress code for the FBI, man. They're like the straightest looking people in the world. This guy looks like he should be ripping out fucking Fallen Angel or something by Poison.
Oh yeah, the guys who tap their headsets and protect the president. There's no way.
Does he? I mean, he's got a lot of fun henchmen. I mean, the best being Pony. We'll talk about Pony in a bit. Or Marcus, whatever. Yeah. But he does have this other sort of indisposable henchman who looks like Mick Foley. To continue the wrestling theme. Savak is involved in shenanigans, and North's daughter witnesses a murder. And this takes place in the... And then her and her mom, this would be the estranged wife of the boss, end up both on the receiving end of a bullet in a convenience store.
And then this is great stuff, because the arms dealing was carried out right in front of this convenience store, and which I thought was just like, couldn't they under the cover?
What a better place that you're looking for in 7-Eleven parking lot to do in broad daylight to sell, you know, high-powered top-secret ordinances. I mean, that's a place to be.
Especially when they're labeled military ordinances.
And you can even get a slur. Exactly. Yeah, you can slur them while you're doing it. So yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a big surfeit of abandoned urban warehouses on the market in action movies, but for whatever reason, they couldn't find them, and this deal went down right there. And yeah, as you said, these two are going on a shopping excursion. They witness the illicit dealings of the arms, and they cannot be left alive. They are the sole witnesses, so they get wasted. Mm-hmm. And
so the wife dies instantly, and North also gets pretty his ass kicked too.
Oh yeah,
he attempts to pull a cobra and go in there single-handedly.
I thought Terminator, but either way, yeah.
Arnie is a fucking cyborg. Cobra is armed to the gills.
Yeah,
North has got absolutely nothing. He walks in like a fucking chump, and he gets shot first in the shoulder and then point blank in the chest. Like a fucking jobber, dude. It was pathetic. And I'm like, this is our action hero?
He did take out a bunch of the henchmen in the convenience store.
I know.
With one bullet in him.
In his arm. But then once it was in the chest, it's like, dude, you're down for the count. And he ends up, you know, convalescing for a while. And
that's
in the meantime,
one of the time-honored action movie cliches is the not being wasted the first go round. Always, you have this giant convalescing montage. Strangely, not here.
Not here.
You have two characters, him and his daughter, lying in intensive care, which is amazing.
So he wakes up fully healed just in time to see his daughter die. He gets to see her lying in the coma for all of like a half a day.
I love how they broach the subject right away. It's like he just opens his eyes. He's been, I think they said 8 or 9 weeks he was in a coma. Oh, by the way, your daughter's dead. Like, couldn't they have waited?
Did he get a chance to see her comatose for a moment or two before she died?
Oh, I didn't even think of that. I was going to say, like, the poor bastard is, you know, he maybe that's not the first thing he should hear. Maybe they should tell the birds are chirping, Chris, and the sun is shining.
One tough bastard, not a poor bastard. Yeah. Sorry, gotta get the title, one tough bastard.
A tough bastard.
So already the pathos is being laid on pretty thick in terms of, you know, this guy, his wife and his daughter are dead. But of course, one man's justice. He needs to take revenge. So this becomes a revenge film.
Terrible raping.
He's not cleaning up the streets.
He wants
justice for his lost kinfolk.
And for the title of the film.
Exactly. Mm. So there's, like I said before, you got like the whole subplot with Hammer, who's in it for like two scenes, maybe, as some sort of drug dealer. I mean, it does sort of involve Savak. Savak is in Hawk to Hammer, and at one point they have this tete-a-tete, Savak throws some choice racial epithets at Hammer, which I thought was kind of, I mean, God, at this point, I mean, Hammer was beyond destitute. He must have fallen for bankruptcy 3 times. I think this was when he was officially going by Hammer, not MC Hammer, but Hammer, trying to resuscitate his career as a gangster rapper, because old wholesome Hammer, you know, you can't touch this, would never be in a film like this playing a drug dealer.
Yeah,
never.
Sure.
He wanted to maintain a wholesome image, right? But then, once he found the hard times, he wanted to reinvent himself as a gangster rapper, and I think this was around that time.
Hard times and hard drugs. Yeah, he was the kingpin out of a heroin ring. This is almost like right out of a 70s blaxploitation. And true to form, he's got a bunch of corner boys that do his work for him, which adds another interesting dimension. We have these little kids who are drug dealing, and one of whose mother works at the FBI, I believe.
In some capacity, which really wasn't made clear.
Yeah, that made no sense. It was just a cheap excuse to have the boss be a sort of a perfunctory father figure. Unbelievably hackneyed.
Little Mikey is like, you know, first he's like a street tough. He's like, I can turn out.
I can take care of myself.
He's the urban version of, what's her name, Harmony from Land of Doom or whatever, right?
Take excellent care of
myself. But ultimately, this is all about
Savak.
Savak.
Yeah.
And Savak, who's in Hawk the Hammer, but also knows that this North guy is coming for him, he's causing some shit of his own to try and save his own hide. And then there's this other character, the aforementioned Pony, who's another henchman of Savak. And he becomes a very bizarre character because when I first saw him, and I thought, this guy can actually act. He's the only person in this movie that can act.
He looks the part. It's sort of like, well, William Forsythe. He's a badass. He looks creepy
as
hell.
But it's funny. He does. You're right. And it's funny because he then he's like, sitting on the street corner trying to be all urban. And I wrote that in my notes. I'm like, this guy is trying to be urban when he looks like he should be a member of Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah,
then which I IMDb'd him, and boom, he was on Sons of Anarchy.
He looks like a meth head Willem Dafoe.
Totally.
He's incredible. There's also a double cross, which is also great in action movies, but this one is so shoehorned in. They were totally, fully unnecessary, where these guys rob Savak, and then Savak shows his bona fides by just manhandling them and shooting the shit out of them, but not before announcing the film's greatest line.
Please, but I have to interrupt you because there was somebody else in my head that I thought Savak looked like, and it just popped in. Jeff Spicoli.
Oh, well.
He's got a real Spicoli vibe about him, too. You know, that Sean Penn and Fast. Yeah. So tell me the best line.
Oh, well, he gets double-crossed by these basically a bunch of army turncoats. They've got their arms fixed on him as they've double-crossed him, and he says, "You got the gun, but I got the guns." And he flips them out like he's Wyatt Earp from each, like from left and right hand, and shoots all the guys in the room. It's fantastic.
The
pronouncements before the action in this movie, I think, trumps all other action movies I've seen. Arnie is known for his portentous predictors of his performance. Mm-hmm. There's some alliteration. But this movie, my God, from Welcome back to the winning team, Pony, and I'm going to need 5 ambulances right away. Preceding the ass-kicking, this is the Boz character. The guy has the balls, the gall, the temerity to announce the location where he's at and to say, I'm going to need 5 ambulances. But every character who's worth his salt in toughness announces something that he's going to do and then does it. I thought, that is amazing. Well, I'm going to need an ambulance. He's on the phone with 911
and
dispatch.
And he's specific about it, too.
He's specific, and he's got 2 guns aimed at his temple. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of those 90s cell phones.
You know, but as many badass lines as the Boz was given, first of all, before I even get into that, I want to talk about my favorite Savak line, because it's such a non sequitur. Before he wastes somebody, he goes, it's illegal to drive dead. That's my favorite. Yeah, he was given some badass lines to say, but he doesn't come across as a badass. His hair is thinning. He's looking a little haggard. It's just, I don't know, man. The Boz.
He's not particularly imposing physically, but when the comes down to firing the guns, he backs it up.
It's funny that you say, not funny, but I mean, one of the things that does happen is that North does become a bit of a ersatz father figure to this to Mikey, this little black kid, and at one point. He enlists Mikey to spread a rumor throughout the streets because Mikey knows the streets really well.
Yeah, being all of 11.
And North, despite the fact that he's a sergeant, is also seems to be in with the cops, and he's got a good rapport with the cops. And in my mind, I wrote them like, what is this turning into Cop and a Half all of a sudden? Yeah. Like, this is becoming like a more
that confused
testosterone
me a too, yeah.
version of Cop and a Half. So just nutty shit. And, you know, there's even hackneyed subplots like the Boz trying to teach Mikey right from wrong, and at one point he has, because really, although the orders came from Savak, it was Marcus, aka Pony, that pulled the trigger on his wife and daughter, right?
Yeah, well, in many ways, Marcus is the one who propels the plot. Yeah, everything's involving him, even though he gets like 4th billing.
And so, at one point, North has the opportunity to waste Marcus, but Mikey's watching him, and so he lets him go. Because he's trying to teach little Mikey that violence is not the answer, as he's like giving people concussions left, right, and center, snapping bones, putting people into traction, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, yeah, if you break someone's clavicle in the forest and no one's around to see it, is it still act of violence? Marcus, this guy is fantastic. It's my favorite part of the whole film. There's a wonderful brawl in a tattoo shop. Oh. As is the case in an action movie, you get something traumatic happens to the hero. He's recovering, he's convalescing, and then finally little snippets of memory start coming back to him. And much like Seagal in Out to Kill or Out for Justice or Hard to Kill or whatever it is, one of the 3 named titles. And he gets this image of a neck tattoo. And that finally he knows like who was responsible for the shooting in the convenience store, because it's all been hazy. So there's this montage of tattoo shops. Like, I love
ridiculous
that. How insane. Yeah, he goes to like 4 or 5 tattoo shops all in the same tattoo annex.
It's funny, we live in Toronto, obviously our downtown Toronto headquarters, and I've had the opportunity to travel to some pretty interesting places in the last few months. I mean, I went with you to London, England. Yeah. I went to New York City. I went to Berlin, Germany. I got to say, Toronto is one of the most heavily tattooed cities in the world.
Agreed.
And within my neighborhood, I can name 40 tattoo shops. And they're all busy. So there's no fucking way if I walked in and said, and pointed to I had a neck tattoo flash, which other people get, and say, oh, do you remember tattooing this on someone's neck?
Yeah, I only do 500 a year, but I know that
they're going to give you the time. Mind you, the guy was pretty surly.
Yeah.
And so we had some beatdowns that went down, including, you got to love it, kicking somebody through a window, which shatters a million pieces. A roundhouse kick through a wall, which is obviously plywood. But then the tattoo artist does not want to give up the information. So Boz, this is hilarious. He uses the tattoo gun as a weapon and goes, and the guy screams in utter agony. He's a fucking tattoo artist. He has tattoos. So
he did put it through his hand.
It doesn't matter. I gotta have tattoos on my hand. It's not. He didn't
through his hand.
No. It was more like, what he did is it gave him a really bad tattoo. That's all he did.
Well, and of course, it's a part of a plot device too, because the tattoo shop owners are in cahoots with Marcus and Savak. Everyone's in cahoots. So, but it was funny too. It's like he precedes this massive tattoo, Donnybrook, with you know, answering that the question, oh, do you have a message for Marcus? He goes, yeah, this is my message or something. And then he proceeds to give them all a, you know, a thorough beatdown. So, yeah, that's his message right there. The medium of fisticuffs is his message, to paraphrase Marshall McLuhan.
So this movie is a bone-dead action film, but it's a heck of a lot of fun. What did you learn from this?
Oh, man. This is a favorite. So much. This is an amazing, amazing movie. Mm-hmm. I learned that in every Boz movie we've covered, if I'm not mistaken, he has to make some sort of allusion to his truncated football career. So here he actually sings the Oklahoma University theme song in the Jeep at the beginning. And it's like, oh, okay, we know it. You played for Oklahoma University. He did the same thing in Virus, where somebody references Oklahoma, and it's like, is he contractually obligated?
See, every time I hear the word Oklahoma,
you think of the crappy musical?
No, I think of one of my absolute favorite films of the 80s, my favorite comedies that I had the pleasure of being taken to by my dad to go see in the theater, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, starring
great movie.
Michael Caine and Steve Martin.
That was a great movie.
You know, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Oklahoma. Oh, God, I'll never forget. I must have watched that scene alone. I must have rewound it like 30 times.
Oh, another thing I learned. Among Savak's just many lines, he just says, yo, you like Muhammad Ali? Well, I bet you can't dance like him. I was like, what? Like, since when is Muhammad Ali known for dancing?
What? Float like a butterfly? Was it dance like a bee?
Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. But I never saw him cut the rug.
No, but his footwork was considered. He had some pretty fancy footwork.
You could say, you know? Who do you think you are? James Brown. And then there's another reference to Run DMC, where one guy's like calling out that.
It's 1996. What a timely reference.
Well, that Marcus character is like, the meth head, Sons of Anarchy guy in the middle of the East LA, and some other character calls him out.
Of another comedy I saw in theater when I was a kid. Keith Maron's Born in East LA.
Oh, nice.
That was a great one, man. What's happening?
Oh, that's good stuff.
Those who've seen the movie know exactly what I'm talking about.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Anything else you learned?
Again, the aforementioned Hawks, just on the soundtrack, just over and over and over again. The tepid music.
There was no real rocking number in this. That's one thing this movie needed to really get the adrenaline going, was like a real kick-ass theme song. Like Shotgun has some good theme songs, you know, some good rock and good generic rock.
They did have a sort of lugubrious, pathos-inducing use of all things, Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, and during one of the more, like, dramatic moments. I thought, like, who would have thought, like, this piece of garbage movie like this would use Beethoven?
Because these classical movies are, I'm sorry, these classical movies
public domain.
Public domain, so they can take whatever they want and use it to any purpose. So, you know.
Oh, what did you learn?
Nothing. That's why I love it when you have tons that you learn. Because honestly, it was funny that they were trying to appeal in some really hackneyed way to the urban demographic. The casting of Hammer, who at this point is at least 3 years past his
salad days,
and that was even like that was when he was doing Too Legit to Quit, which was he was already on the downfall because his real heyday was in 1990 to 91. Okay, so it's 5 years past, and plus he's barely in it. But then you got this subplot about East LA and selling drugs on the street and knowing the streets and oh my god, don't get in with a gang and they killed my friends, I gotta take revenge because I'm only 11, and you know, so it was, I don't know why the producers felt the need to shoehorn that in, because there really was no, and of course the Run DMC reference is probably part of their, I mean, it's almost like the Canada boys saying, hey, we need urban in the movie, what do we know, rap, okay, yeah. Run DMC, very popular with the kids, even though it's 13 years later, exactly. 80, you know?
Oh, there's a boom mic shot as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when one of the little corner boys threatens Mikey with a gun on the street, and then the boom mic makes a brief appearance there.
And now when you know, we say the word corner boys, I'm thinking of a Tom Waits song. I mean, you know, we always sing about corner boys. I don't know. You're just bringing all the musical melodies to my head today. But anyway.
You're going to burst out into song, almost like it's Oklahoma. I was going to say Savak sounded at times. He was a British actor, I believe, Bruce Payne. At times, he sounds a bit Nicholson-esque. So he has this line, welcome back to the winning team, Pony. And he keeps, I don't know if Pony was a character, but...
Well, Pony was his nickname for Marcus.
Oh, okay, because he kept bringing up Pony, 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 and welcome to the dog like his, and pony show, Pony. It was like Pony. His
pejorative nickname for Marcus, yeah.
Oh, my, yeah.
Yeah, I guess the other thing I might say I've learned is that it seems to me that every time I watch a film starring a past his prime football player, it's always entertaining. So my honestly, it's always awfully entertaining. I'm like, you know, and I mean awfully entertaining. Mm. My question to you is why? I know he got scooped up by the World of Wrestling, but Steve Mongo McMichael, he would have made an awesome action hero, man.
He yeah, sort of I think had a so
Seagal-esque
too.
Look.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Oh, he had a little bit of
Robert Zadar.
Yeah, he had a Robert Zadar vibe, except like maybe a foot taller.
Yeah, right? Well, he had like a wide face. So,
but I think he had a good thing going with Ric Flair and the NWO, or I think he was part
well,
of
the
them.
Fact
or
the that he was part of the
Four Horsemen.
Woo!
Yeah,
woo!
You know, it's funny, just becoming increasingly annoying. Every sporting event has that.
Every time. Because there's been many horsemen throughout the history of that illustrious stable, and probably one of the best stables in the history of wrestling, right?
Arn Anderson, greatest among them, I would argue. Yeah.
Every time they rank the horsemen from the top, from the best to the worst, of course, Ric Flair is always the best. Arn is usually number two. The worst is invariably not Paul Roma. Paul the fucking Italian Stallion Roma. The jobber from WWE became a full-fledged horseman in WCW, and then number two is always... good old Mr. McMichael. Now, Chris Benoit was even a horseman at one point.
I did not know that.
But he's, you know, sort of expunged from all history when it comes to wrestling.
Exactly. Oh, my God.
So, star rating.
Oh, amazing. As a brain-dead action movie, and of its type, too. Like, this is one of the standouts in the 90s, along with the aforementioned Stone Cold. I'm going to give this one as an action movie, this is 4.5 stars for me. as a regular movie, obviously, like, this is completely contrived, completely just... crowbarred in ridiculous subplots to appeal to every demographic imaginable. Just, if I'm not mistaken, I think Kurt Wimmer was the director, and he's credited, but someone else took over midway, which is never a good sign. As an actual movie, this is 2-star, but as an action film, this is 4.5.
I'm not going to be thunderous stars. It's funny because I'm not going to be as generous as you, but I'm going to give it a good 4 stars for a bonehead piece of entertainment. It is Again, I was grinning from ear to ear.
I was applauding and laughing to myself.
And it just kept getting nuttier and nuttier, you know, to the point that I almost felt like I had to grab an EpiPen. It was so nutty.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not allergic to nuts.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Anyway, for more, check out our podcast, uploaded for your listening enjoyment every Friday. New episodes. And email us any choice action movie suggestions, reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.